Happy New Year and welcome back to Today in Focus. We start 2019 by asking if a growing anti-vaccine movement is putting lives at risk. And, in opinion, Guardian and Observer columnist Sonia Soda on why it's time to shake up the honours system. In 1998, a gastroenterologist called Andrew Wakefield claimed that the measles, mumps and rubella vaccine was linked to autism. It was one of the most controversial health stories of a generation, causing alarm amongst parents as the immunisation rate collapsed. Over the years, the original research was widely discredited. Trust was slowly rebuilt and the doctor at the heart of the scandal seemed to disappear. But
autism has become an epidemic. You take this little beautiful baby and you pump. It looks just like it's meant for a horse, not for a child.
Vaccine skepticism is back. Health experts say social media and populists are fueling a growing movement that has seen worrying trends in vaccination rates, including for HPV, which can lead to cervical cancer, flu, and measles.
The World Health Organization has a goal to eradicate measles in Europe by 2020, so it should be almost gone. But last year, there were the highest number of measles cases in Europe for 20 years, 60,000 and 72 deaths, and that's mostly children and vulnerable adults.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, is a growing anti-vaccine movement putting lives at risk?
There actually have been vaccine sceptics ever since vaccines were invented. But when it comes to measles, mumps, rubella, it does date back to 1998 very specifically, and a press conference that I actually went to in February of that year at the Royal Free Hospital.
Sarah Bosley is The Guardian's health editor.
So I went to this building and went in, and it was held in a big lecture theatre. So I remember we all had these individual seats. It was a bit like sitting an exam in school with those little desks that sort of you can pull over or push away. And there at the front was a lineup of very serious scientists with very long faces, you know, looking very slightly pompous. And amongst them was Andrew Wakefield, who was young, charismatic, plus the dean of the Royal Free Medical School, who was the most sober-faced of the lot. And he was so worried about what Wakefield was saying, really, really anxious about it.
Measles, mumps and rubella given together may be too much for the immune system of some children.
They reckoned there was a link between gut disease in children and autism, and that in some way the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine might be the thing that triggered this off. For the most part, the conference was about the paper and about the scientific work that the team had done, but the really difficult moment, the moment that really turned the whole issue around and launched 1,000 anti-vaccine groups was when Wakefield actually said
there is a case for dissociating these vaccines into their component parts, separate measles, mumps,
that he thought that the measles, mumps and rubella vaccine should not be given as one shot, that it should be given as separate vaccines for safety. And it was that thing, which was not part of the paper, which really alarmed people massively and caused all the anxiety that followed.
Did you think at the time, this doesn't sound right?
What I did think was, that's one heck of a claim. When you're a journalist, and particularly perhaps if you have a specialisation, you have an antenna. And I think it was very obvious to those of us who covered health that he was saying something that was really front page news. Certainly, I had that moment when it's not exactly stomach turning over, but it's something of that sort. You think, oh, there is something that's being said here that's going to be a big story. How big, I could not possibly have imagined at that time.
Claims there could be a link between a common childhood vaccine and autism.
Questions were raised today about the safety of the combined mumps, measles and rubella vaccine.
New research showing a possible link with a bowel disease which could lead to autism.
According to Dr. Wakefield's theory, the MMR vaccine can damage the intestines of some children, allowing toxins to leak.
The impact was massive. parents were scared. They really were worried by what he'd said. I'll give you an indication of just how powerful this story was. Right from the beginning, I was really concerned that Andrew Wakefield was saying something that would worry people and that there wasn't evidence for it. I had two daughters. I have got two daughters. The second of those two daughters was about to have her booster, her MMR booster, and I delayed it, alongside lots of other people. I actually didn't take her along for the second booster. And so many people were like me. We were really worried in case there was something in it. So vaccination rates dropped in the UK. You need to have 95% of children vaccinated to avoid any sort of outbreak. Ours went down to about 80% overall, but there were parts of London where people were particularly anxious about it, which dropped to 65%. A lot of people decided, I think, to err on what they thought was the side of being safe rather than sorry, and they thought that was not to have the jab. So they didn't want to take what they saw as a risk. And this is always the trouble with vaccinations. There's a tiny, tiny element of risk in any intervention, you know, any vaccination. And you may be the one in 1 million who does get an adverse reaction from a vaccination. But you have to balance that against the benefit, which is for protection from the disease.
Because when you're vaccinating your own child, it's actually not necessarily because you think they'll definitely not get the disease. It's about preventing others getting the disease as well.
In a way, it's a piece of social action when you vaccinate a child. You are helping everybody else in your community. And it's what we used to call herd immunity. People don't like that idea anymore because the idea of children being in herd is not very nice. So, but it is definitely an act of responsibility. There may be a child down the road who's had leukemia, and if that child comes anywhere near measles virus, which is one of the most contagious viruses on the planet, they will get it and they would probably die.
So you were really involved in this story for a long time. Did you change your mind about your daughter having the MMR booster?
As time went on, in the next 6 months or so, a lot of things were going on. A lot of evidence was being produced. The Medical Research Council was summoned to get together and go through the evidence that the Wakefield team had. And I came to the conclusion that actually the jab was safe. That's what most people were saying, most of the public health people were saying. So she did in fact have her MMR, and I wrote a piece about that because I felt that too, that so many people out there were very worried, so many people were not having their child vaccinated, and it was a very, very difficult decision to make, especially if you are not used to seeing the diseases around you. And we don't see measles, mumps and rubella very much.
After the MMR rate plummeted, trust began to be rebuilt as several studies failed to find any credible link between the vaccine and autism. Wakefield was increasingly discredited and eventually in 2010 struck off by the General Medical Council after a journalist uncovered allegations of professional misconduct.
Andrew Wakefield arrived at the GMC this afternoon to face the cameras, but not the music. He simply wasn't there when the disciplinary panel found him guilty on almost every charge. He'd been dishonest. He'd failed to disclose financial interests. He abused trust.
The uptake of MMR returned to above 90%, and in Britain, Wakefield disappeared from public view. And that was the end of the story. Or so we thought.
The real revelation was in July this year when suddenly there were photographs of Andrew Wakefield with the supermodel Elle Macpherson.
I've been working on it for 7 years.
And it was suddenly the tabloids were saying, hey, look, you know, Wakefield, who we all remember, this discredited doctor, is in fact going out with a supermodel.
Bizarre.
Yeah, very bizarre. People sort of did a double take and started to look at what Wakefield had actually been up to. So it turns out that he'd been in Texas for years and slowly plugging away at his theory. And then he started doing interviews. So he was interviewed with Alex Jones, the right-wing conspiracy theorist, on his controversial website, InfoWars.
Andrew Wakefield and his partner's been exonerated in England. They came out and said it was all a hoax. He's now gone public. The media won't cover it. You're just still worried about the millions of kids getting brain damaged.
Alex, it's not about me. It's not about me at all. I'm just a guy trying to do a job and trying to and being prevented. So I'm really just obstinate, but I'm not going to go away. I'm not going to duck this issue. It's far too important.
You made a film called Vaxxed, which was all about how the American health establishment were covering up the link that they knew about all the time between MMR and autism, theoretically.
There's a whistleblower from the CDC who's going to come out and say that the CDC had committed fraud on the MMR study and that they knew that vaccines were actually causing autism.
And Robert De Niro, who has an autistic son, wanted to premiere the film at the Tribeca Film Festival.
I think the movie is something that people should see. There's a lot of information about things that are happening with the CDC, the pharmaceutical companies. There's a lot of things that are not said.
And then Donald Trump appeared to be endorsing Wakefield's theory.
And we've had so many instances, people that work for me just the
other day. He said that an employee of his had a child who developed autism after having the MMR jab.
And came back and a week later got a tremendous fever, got very, very sick, now is autistic.
And all of that may have been random, but then Wakefield turned up at the president's inaugural ball.
So it sounds like this guy, who was once a total pariah in Britain, has been embraced by the A-list in America. Is that because the world has changed and suddenly a voice like Andrew Wakefield's fits better?
What has happened is that the world has changed. And if you look on social media and if you look at what the anti-vaccine people are saying, the anti-vaxxers, they embrace Wakefield's ideas. There is a huge amount of anti-vaccine sentiment on the internet, on social media sites, on Facebook. There are people who are putting out pictures there of babies who are said to have died after having vaccines. It's all sorts of things that are anti-science and really quite worrying. And there is all that underworld, really, that the mainstream science doesn't get a look at. Certainly the rebuttals that they would put forward are never advanced on anything like YouTube.
So what type of groups are persuaded by these messages?
It's interesting to see who the anti-vaxxers are, in fact, in the States. There are two clear trends. And one is those people who actually dispute the right of the state to tell us what to do. So broadly speaking, this is the populist movement. This is Donald Trump. They say, you can't tell me to vaccinate my child. I will make that decision. So that's the anti-authority libertarians who are generally right-wing on the one hand. But on the other hand, you've got another grouping, and this has been the case very much in California, where there's been an anti-vaccine movement, who tend to be the back-to-nature, Mother Earth-type people, if you like, who are actually saying, look, I don't want my child to be injected with chemicals, you know, any more than I would want pesticides in the food that I eat.
And it's not just the US. Tell us what else is happening around Europe.
Europe is particularly problematic when it comes to measles. And there are some political groups in Europe that are really endorsing the ideas of the anti-vaccine community. And that is very troubling. I spoke to the European Health Commissioner, Vytenis Andriukaitis, who told me he was really disturbed by the populist politicians. He accused them of irresponsibility, in fact, because in Italy, the Five Star Movement, which is now in government with other parties, actually even wanted to pass a law against vaccination before it came to power. Its founder, Beppe Grillo, actually said that vaccines do more harm than good. They cause more illnesses than they cure. Con suo sistema immunitario, perfetto, giusto, un anno. In France, you have real worries because Marine Le Pen, who leads what's now called the National Rally Party, used to be the National Front, has also championed the right of parents to refuse to vaccinate their children. Nie brakowało też wsparcia rodziców ze stowarzyszenia Stop NOP. In Poland, there's an anti-vaccine group called Stop NOP, which is a Polish acronym for undesirable vaccine reactions. So they are campaigning that there are bad side effects. And they gathered more than 100,000 signatures on a petition to change the law to end mandatory vaccination.
What is it that links anti-vaccination movements to the rise of populism?
I think it's distrust above all else. I think they have in common a suspicion of the establishment, of authority, of government. The anti-vaxxers don't trust scientists, certainly don't trust Big Pharma. The populists, right-wing populists, don't trust big corporations. They say these are money-making machines, not in the interests of the people. So they have a lot in common.
You've mentioned a few times that a lot of these figures who are leading the kind of anti-vaxxer movement, if you like, are very suspicious about establishment bodies, so medical institutions, governments, and the pharma industry. Do they have reason to be suspicious of pharma? I mean, these people are motivated primarily by money, aren't they?
There's a difference between the people who are actually designing the drugs, who actually invent the drugs, the scientists in the lab, and the marketing departments. And that's the fundamental thing. So actually, pharma, if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have cures for all sorts of diseases if we didn't have the pharmaceutical industry. So you can't throw the whole thing out, you know, the baby out with the bathwater. The science of vaccines and medicines is pretty complicated stuff. So the difficulty is that the people who really know these things probably work for drug companies and vaccine companies in the first place. So we have difficulty often trusting them because we don't trust Big Pharma anymore. And we do have reasons not to trust Big Pharma. And I used to write all sorts of stories about their disgraceful pricing, for instance, of their drugs. And also sometimes the concealment of the side effects. And those things have happened, and we all know that. But when you come to look at the actually how vaccines work, for instance, you do have to make sure that the person who's the critic knows their stuff. And there are a lot of people out there who are throwing all sorts of spurious arguments, actually, about vaccines. I don't feel comfortable particularly being a defender of vaccines and medicines, because that's not what I've done throughout my career or in health, because it you know, we always have to be skeptics ourselves. But the trouble is that skepticism now has taken a new life, and people will not listen to people who actually do have serious information, and they won't listen to the serious scientists.
So we know there's distrust of the establishment, but are there any other changes to society that may be pushing down the vaccination rate?
In the past, vaccination was always understood, I think, by people as for the good of society. So you were vaccinating your own child, yes, in the hopes of protecting them from disease, but also in the knowledge that you would help protect the whole of the rest of your society from disease. And there may be one or two children who can't be vaccinated for genetic reasons or because their immune system's compromised. Those children would have been protected by everybody else who was vaccinated. So vaccination was a social good, part, if you like, of a sort of social compact. And we live in a day when that is less understood, less accepted.
And it's not just an abstract thing. What is the impact of all of this?
The impact of this is a lot of diseases taking place and people getting damaged and even dying of diseases that should be totally preventable. So we're talking about cervical cancers that should never happen, older people probably dying of flu, and we have 72 deaths from measles already, probably mostly children. That's a completely preventable disease. It shouldn't be happening, not in the 21st century.
Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Anushka.
Sarah Bosley's reporting on the growth in vaccine scepticism was part of The Guardian's new populism series. You can follow the project and read her pieces at theguardian.com. Coming up, did you get irritated over Christmas when the honours list came out and the senior gongs went to loads of white men? I did, and so did Sonia Soda. Stay with us. Welcome back. Now, Guardian and Observer columnist Sonia Soda argues that the honours system needs an overhaul.
I think there's a danger with this, which is that, you know, you have the New Year's list come out, you have the Queen's birthday list come out in June. Everyone sort of says, shock, horror, it's not good enough, it's not transparent enough, there's not enough diversity, twice a year, and then we all move on. So it's quite a sort of old-fashioned, antiquated system. So at the very top, you've got knighthoods and people being made a dame. That's considered to be sort of the creme de la creme of the honours list. Then there are a whole host of other honours, Commander of the British Empire, you've got Officer of the British Empire, and then below those, you've got Member of the British Empire. So it's a very confusing system, quite a hierarchical system. So when I saw the honours list this year on New Year's Eve, it seemed in many ways like a very typical honours list. So there were those honours where you think, wow, those people, you know, I can't think of a better recipient for that honour. And it's really, you know, people who've gone above and beyond, shown massive bravery, like the people who were involved in responding to the Manchester terror attacks. And you just think, you know, this is great that we've got some way of recognising them. Then I would say there's a whole other chunk where you're a bit like, well, why are they getting an honour? You know, they maybe have done perfectly great things. In that category, I would include, for example, Twiggy, the really iconic 70s model, Margaret Atwood. Now, I love Margaret Atwood's novels, but she's won loads of prizes for her novels, rightly. She's doing her job, and it is a bit like, well, why is she getting an honour for essentially being a brilliant novelist when that is recognised in her field? And there are a number of other people like that as well. So we saw big sports stars, actors, for example. People are getting gonged for maybe doing some great stuff, but it's for celebrity and for stuff which they've already been recognised for. And then there was a third category of people, which is politicians. So there is, I think there are these two big concerns around political honours. One is, are they being used by, you know, considering the chief whips are on the committees, are they being used as a sweetener to try and get MPs to act in a particular way? And then secondly, you know, do MPs really deserve these honours? Because yes, absolutely, some MPs do a fantastic job, but they are doing their job description. The other thing I think that really stands out about this year's list is when you look at diversity. First of all, on the surface, it appears to be quite good. But when you start to dig into the figures a bit more, that's where some problems start to arise. So when you look at the most senior level of honours, actually the figures look a lot worse. So the proportion of people from a BAME background getting those high-level honours drops dramatically from 12% on average to just 4%. For women, it's 37%, which raises some real concerns about the system. There's not much transparency around it. We don't really know who's being nominated. We don't really know who gets accepted. Because the system is opaque, we don't know quite where the problem lies. I think some of it will be that the system is still too dominated. You know, the number of senior civil servants getting honours has gone down, but it's still quite significant. And we know that that is an overwhelmingly white male pool that people are fishing in for nominations. So that might be a problem. It might be that people are not nominating enough women or nominating enough BAME people. I think we need to take a step back and say, well, what is the honours system for? And I think, actually, I would argue we should also perhaps think about how we involve the public a bit more. And that's because it's our honours system. Put some ordinary members of the public on these committees, change the nominations procedure perhaps, so it's not even filling in a form, it might be going along to an event. I think there's ways in which the public could be more involved in more exciting ways. It would make them feel like they've got ownership of this system as well. Because it is a really great way of recognising contribution. And it's a way that I know people who get honours really, really value. And yeah, I think that element of mass celebration is very important about it. But we need to clean up the system so we can all kind of, without any ambiguity, say, yes, this is a brilliant thing. We all know how it works. We all know it's about recognising contribution rather than just doing your day job or being famous, in order for, I think, us to fully embrace it as a country.
That was Guardian and Observer columnist Sonia Soda, and that's it for today. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly, India Rakerson, and Amar Kalia. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier. The executives were Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. See you tomorrow.